This is the Morning Conversation on News Radio 1240 KQEN.
And joining us from Washington, D.C. this morning, U.S. Senator Jeff Merkley. Senator, good morning.
Good morning, Kyle. Great to be with you.
Well, I understand you're just back into D.C. after a few days back here in Oregon. And I wanted to back up as we begin and kind of get your overall thoughts on the midterm elections, especially as they applied to Oregon.
Well, certainly it was a high turnout for a midterm election. People were very engaged by the ballot measures, by the new congressional seat. I must say, the process of citizens coming together every 2 years to help define our future is just the most beautiful thing in a democratic republic.
Now, of course, Senator Wyden re-elected, and what do you think about the makeup of both the Senate and the House for Oregon?
Well, in the Senate, of course, Senator Wyden and I, and Wyden was up. He's the only one. The House, all six seats were up, including that new seat. It split 2-4, which is basically a little bit more balanced than the 1-4 we had previously. I think that's a reasonable appropriation or approximation to the sentiments of Oregon. We'll have folks in the majority. We'll have folks in the minority so they can weigh in. Hopefully they can all weigh in together on a number of topics that are important to our state.
What about the top accomplishments for Congress in 2022? What do you think they are?
Yeah, so if I'll kind of roll that back for the 2 years because they kind of merged together. But the first was saving America from a Great Depression when we were dropping over 1% a month in unemployment back in January, February 2021. It was really dark. I mean, we were at 10%, then we were at 12%, we were at 14%, we were at 16% unemployment. Just the whole bottom was falling out, and that American Rescue Plan really made a difference, especially in saving our small businesses. And then we did a whole series of bills to follow up on that to help sustain a higher level of unemployment support and small business support to get us through. So that was great. The infrastructure bill, bipartisan effort, biggest project since Eisenhower. That's going to be very significant. We're way behind on our infrastructure. You go to other major countries around the world and you see that their bridges and roads, every kind of aspect of their systems are in better shape than ours. So that's a plus, and it will mean a lot of employment for the 10 years to come. Then some of the initiatives that I was immersed in with my role on the Appropriations Committee, one was to help get a lot of money for Oregon on irrigation piping. We're losing so much water from the extended droughts and from the loss of snowpack in the Cascades. We're now over $100 million I've secured for Oregon to help irrigation districts pipe. A second is I set out to get a lot more money for forest management and been able to increase it about tenfold from about $100 million per year to a billion per year. And then community-initiated projects. My team went out and met with people in every county. And just an example, in Douglas County, there were three proposals I was able to get passed. One was for the Corps of Engineers for work on the Umpqua River project. Another was for the radio system update for Douglas County. And a third for the Emergency Mobile Command Center for Douglas County. And I did this for every county across the state, fought for them, and delivered for just projects in almost every corner of the state.
A lot of different things to cover here. I wanted to ask about your concerns regarding the U.S. role in dealing with other nations right now. We've got the Ukraine-Russia conflict, Korea making comments periodically that are concerning. What about the U.S. role in all this?
Yeah, so Ukraine is a republic. They repeatedly threw out leaders who tried to subject them to control by Russia, their Orange Revolution. The people have been in the streets. It's like the American Revolution. I mean, they really believe in the vision of voting and controlling their own destiny. We have to stand with them. We cannot let an authoritarian nation, a real KGB thug like Putin, just start invading other countries. And so I'm really proud of America standing up and getting all of Europe to hang in there, even after they've had all their fossil gas supply basically cut off, and they're going to face a lot of pain this winter. I also think we have to be very strong in standing with Taiwan. We have to give them and work with them to make sure that it's called the porcupine strategy, that they have the ability to make sure China will not invade Taiwan. They are a functioning democracy, and again, we cannot let an authoritarian nation like China under Xi Jinping roll over the top of a democracy.
What about Korea?
So Korea is North Korea in particular is a real threat. I went over on a trip when it looked like there was a high risk of almost the potential for Armageddon over there with the possibility of essentially North Korea launching their artillery against Seoul, which is not far from the border, which would have been a massive, massive carnage, at least 100,000 dead almost within hours. We have to keep maintaining our immersion with Russia on this and with China. China doesn't like the way North Korea is run, but they also see it as a buffer between them and South Korea. And so this is an area where there's potential for Chinese-American cooperation. What I learned on trip, there's several pressure points for North Korea. One is that their elite want their children to study abroad. They don't want that cut off, so that's a potential pressure point. Another is the money that their workers earn, and they're forced to, when they leave the country, they repatriate the vast bulk of their funds back to the government there. That's another pressure point. This is a place where we aren't going to influence North Korea by ourselves, but if we can team up with China on that, there's some potential to stop their testing of larger missiles, stop their nuclear tests. Very hard to eliminate their nuclear program. We've tried under every presidency to do so, but if they can't test their nuclear weapons, they can't test their big rockets, we will gain something significant.
Now, you mentioned earlier some of the recent legislation in the last year or two you're particularly happy about, but a lot of this has come at a heavy price and resulted in an increase significantly to the federal budget deficit. What do we do about that?
Yeah, the first thing is, we really studied it back in the start of 2021, and the estimates we got were that if we went into a Great Depression, not only would it be enormous misery, but there would be much larger deficits than we have now. So it was smart, both from a budget point of view and in terms of the lives of our citizens, not to allow a complete collapse of our economy. I've always pushed for us to have a 10-year plan that can take us back to a balanced budget. I thought it was great when we got there under President Clinton, but unfortunately that was undone shortly thereafter. I do think that every citizen needs to pay their fair share, and every corporation needs to pay their fair share. They use our education system, our legal system, our transportation system, and yet you have a ton of multi-billion dollar profits per year companies that don't pay a dime in federal taxes. So that has to end. And if we do those things, if we have a 10-year vision, if we also, by the way, take on waste. I spent some years working for Secretary Weinberger under President Reagan and was assigned to work on some of the budget issues, and we found there's just massive waste in the military. You might remember that age of, I don't know what they called it, the $500 toilet and the $200 hammer. So if we take on the waste in the military-industrial complex, have companies and affluent Americans pay their fair share, I think we can balance the budget.
A lot of people ask about U.S. energy policy. The Biden administration has made some rapid moves. Is the energy policy shifting too fast towards solar?
I go to every county every year, and what I hear is our groundwater is disappearing because of the extended drought, and we can't afford to drill deeper. Our forests are burning because they're drier. We are losing the snowpack from the Cascade, providing irrigation water. It's just an assault on all the rural forests, the fishing, the farming, the ranching, and this is climate change. And so if we don't make the transition off of fossil fuels, it will be continuous hell to pay for rural America everywhere. It's different effects in different states. And so we do need to shift quickly. Now, we provide massive subsidies to the fossil fuel industry. And so what the bill we passed will provide more subsidies to renewables to deploy them more quickly, but it still hasn't, still a playing field tipped towards fossils. We really should be tilting it rapidly towards making the transition to renewable energy. We've got to work with the grid. The grid has to be balanced. We need to do a lot more in terms of storage ability and transmission ability to be able to do that. It's now we have these gifts. Solar and wind are now cheaper than fossils. So the smart thing to do is quit subsidizing fossils, accelerate the renewables. That means lower energy prices for all of us. Let's lead the world in doing this. This is a tragedy to commons worldwide. The atmosphere moves everywhere. So, but if we, as the nation that has the largest carbon footprint per person, don't lead on this, the rest of the world won't act either. So we've got to work here, but also work to bring every other major nation along with us.
Final question, as we're just about out of time. What are the particular issues you want to focus on in 2023 in Congress?
Well, one is to try to have bipartisan support for defending the ballot box across America. Make sure everybody can vote. I would like to see us have independent commissions to end the gerrymandering, and I'd like to see us eliminate the dark money. Dark money is a very, very, it drives a lot of cynicism about our government because you have, like, if you or I make a campaign donation, we are recorded. It is a public act. But if a corporation or a wealthy individual donates $100 million to an independent campaign, they can do it in complete anonymity. What's good for the ordinary American is good for the powerful Americans. Full disclosure, full openness on where money is coming from for campaigns. And then I want to keep pressing on healthcare costs. That's a big deal. I want to keep pressing on rapid, effective deployment of the resources to get the infrastructure work actually going. I'm fighting hard for us to get a mega grant for the Coos Bay deep sea cargo terminal. I've had now 5 conversations with the Secretary of Transportation. I've talked to the President about it twice because if we can take that deep sea port in Coos Bay, combined with the railroad line that we saved back when I was in the state legislature, move that cargo fully electrified into the Willamette Valley, we would really restore the economy of a significant part of our coast. So then I want to also keep fighting for this vision of these community-initiated projects where we kind of say, hey, you know what, we know better locally what to do than waiting for someone in D.C. to decide about a grant. Let's get these things funded that the local community wants funded.
All right, we are out of time. U.S. Senator Jeff Merkley in Washington, D.C. Senator, thanks for joining us this morning.
You're welcome. Pleasure to be with you. Thanks for the invitation.
All right, 8:44 at the Morning Report.